1972, with departing staff member John Russell Dean, spelled D-E-A-N-E, the third, a member of the Office of Congressional Relations under Clark McGregor. Mr. Dean is transferring over to the Committee for the Re-election of the President, where Mr. McGregor is currently in charge. You joined the White House staff when, approximately?
We came in on January 3rd of 71. We actually started moving in, I think, on the 30th and the 31st, but we actually began operations on the 3rd of January.
Were you with Clark McGregor when he was up on the Hill?
I was Clark's legislative assistant on the Hill.
How long were you with him up there?
A little over a year. A year and 3 months, I believe it was.
And you came down here, and today's your last day?
Today or tomorrow.
Okay.
I'm not too sure. It depends on how long it takes to fill out the papers and move on.
While you were on the staff here, did you have a title? Was it special assistant?
I was staff assistant to the President and also administrative assistant to Clark McGregor. Occasionally executive assistant to Clark McGregor. Occasionally a few other things.
If we wanted to reach you 10 years or so from now, John, would you have any sort of an address? When I ask that question, some people just throw up their hands and say, I don't know where I'm going to be. Others say, well, I'll probably maintain some sort of correspondence with Mr. Nixon. You could probably always reach me through there. On the other hand, others say, well, I'll probably maintain my affiliation with the American Bar Association or whatever professional group they belong to, or alumni association. Any possibilities along those lines?
I can take a wild guess that I'll be located in Minnesota and probably in the Minneapolis area. I would probably be, assuming I went to Minnesota, I would probably be reachable through the state Republican organization or through one of the bar associations. Now that is, again, idle speculation at this point, 10 years as long.
Some people give the addresses of their parents or in-laws. Would that be another possibility?
Wouldn't be very helpful. My father's in the service, and he floats around a great deal more than I do. And we have a home in New Hampshire, which I'm sure we'll have 10 years hence. And my address there is simply Silver Lake, New Hampshire. But if it were addressed to me, or especially if it were addressed to me in care of General J.W. Hurd, I'm sure I could always be reached. Though it may be somewhat a lengthy process.
That's all right. It gives us some lead, at least. And this, again, is one of the problems that the existing presidential libraries have. When they want to locate people that were on the staff, they start writing, and it comes back, no one lives here by that name or what have you. So if we can have several different options, it helps immensely. Has anyone been assigned your responsibilities in the Congressional Relations Office now that you're leaving?
Well, it's not really, because my responsibilities were as a personal assistant to Clark McGregor. Clark McGregor, of course, has gone across the street to 1701 Pennsylvania Avenue Committee for the Re-election. Bill Timmons took Clark's office, physically took his office, and assumed total control over congressional relations. His assistant is Major Bud McFarland, who is a White House fellow and will be acting in the same type of capacity. But since it is a personal staff type relationship, it's hard to say whether he'll assume the same responsibilities that I do.
Okay. Have there been any magazine or newspaper articles on the McGregor operation that perhaps would have mentioned you if not you personally, some of the activities or assignments that you had?
Well, there have been numerous magazine and newspaper accounts of McGregor and his operation and his activities in congressional relations. I can't think of any right offhand which would have a couple of newspaper accounts might have had my name in it, a couple of speaking events that I was at. But so far as magazine accounts, where it was really dealing with the operation and congressional relations itself, I probably wouldn't have been mentioned specifically, and my responsibilities would have been, of course, so closely related to Clark that it would be hard to distinguish the two. So I guess the direct answer is no.
The National Journal did one rather extensive article back in June of 1970 on the Congressional Relations Office, but of course that was before
that
the
was
Great
before War. We came to
so I was hoping maybe that they'd done something like this, or perhaps some other journal had done something similar to this since he'd taken over.
I'm not familiar with something that would specifically mention me. There could well be a National Journal treatment of congressional relations since McGregor took office, but I. There probably was, as a matter of fact, but I don't recall it specifically mentioning me.
The reason we ask that is, on several occasions, we've had people say, oh yes, it was in Business Week or something else that we might have missed. And this gives us considerable information about the operation of the office and people, too, that becomes very helpful at points in the future. How about the name of a secretary or secretaries that might have worked under you or under McGregor and consequently you at the same time?
There were two that worked for me, and the relationship in McGregor's office was that because of space limitations we were not able to have the secretarial help we really wanted. So my secretary found herself doing a lot of the office chores, answering the phone, which was frequently McGregor's call, of course, answering opening mail, which was office mail, either congressional relations addressed specifically to McGregor or addressed to me. My secretaries were, when we first came to the White House, Ms. Merritt Sanbo, who left in July of 71 and went back to the Hill. She
liked the life up there a little
liked
better,
the life
the pace?
Liked the life and the pace much more. She went to work as a secretary, actually more than a secretary, more of an office manager for Congressman Bill Frenzel, who succeeded Clark in the 3rd District seat from Minnesota. My second secretary took over in July of 71, and her name is Doris Rausch, Ms. Doris Rausch, and she has accompanied Clark as one of his personal secretaries across the street. She has not followed me. So, and the other secretary in the office was Clark's personal secretary, Ms. Kay Humphrey, who has been with him for at least 12 years, and maybe more.
Again, these are people that perhaps at some point in the future we'd like to talk with, too, to get a secretarial slant on the office and the people there. So if we have the names, we've got something to go on. Would you have a biographical sketch somewhere that we might be able to get from you? Gives a little bit of your past, your history, and what have you. We like to stick something like that in the folders as background, because I don't like to delve into it during these little sessions.
Right. The only thing that I have already prepared is a resume, but it's extremely brief and really only goes into my academic background and mentions only by title and position my jobs over the past 5 or 6 years.
Well, if we didn't have anything else, that would be better than nothing.
Matter of fact, I have one that's more complete than that, but it's very outdated, very much outdated. It was used for a different purpose. It was for a legal type position, and so I included a great deal of material that was related to the law and of no concern to anybody else. And I have done away with that resume, and I prepared a new one for the Committee for the Re-election. I gave it to him yesterday, as a matter of fact, to include in my file there. But all that does is simply state my name, address, the fact that I'm married and have one child, 4 jobs I think that I've had, who my boss was in each of those jobs, and the and my academic career, which is just 2 degrees. So it just mentions the schools that I went to and the degrees that I got. There's no more complete than that.
Well,
I can,
say,
I'm sure I can Xerox a copy of that.
If you could, John, it might be of some help to us. Well, I've hit the very basic ones. Now we could move on into, well, one more. As far as records of your activities are concerned, were your responsibilities and assignments documented to any degree at all within McGregor's operation? Would there be papers in the files over there that would, say, reveal your activities maybe to the degree of 20%, 50%, hopefully 100%?
No. There would be, I can't think of any, matter of fact, I'm confident there is nothing that, in essence, delineates my responsibilities at all. At best, they can be gleaned from some of the memos, which I don't even know would be in the file. They're memos that I wrote to McGregor, which would give an idea of the types of activities I involve myself in. The only thing that could possibly be documented, aside from my personal relationship with Clark, was the fact that I was a member of the senior review group of the Property Review Board, and in that capacity, it was a grouping of people actually from various departments and agencies, and their function was to review properties that would subsequently be reviewed by the Property Review Board and make preliminary recommendations and hash out some of the technical details. That can be documented, the fact that I was on it, but no more than that, really. Most of the people spend as much as 50% of their time on that. I spend maybe 4 hours a week on it. So not by choice, just wasn't any time.
Did you maintain what some people call cron files or day files, in other words, copies of any of your memos or something, some sort of a chronological sequence or anything of that nature?
The only thing there would be in Clark's files, and I hate to demonstrate my ignorance of the filing procedures, but that was really the responsibility of the secretaries.
Sure.
I know they had a number of different filing systems. My work would be included in all of them. They had files that were based upon, since our operation was congressional relations, we had files that for each of the members of Congress, and that would include the correspondence in, the correspondence out, and then of course the work that I had done on either of those two pieces of material, or if we were working on a particular project with a member of Congress and I happened to write Clark a memorandum, or he wrote me a memorandum, it would be included in that file. We also had subject matter files, and there were probably a number of other different categorizations and cross-indexing procedures. But my files would have been merged with his, and they, I'm sure, have all been sent to Central Files by now.
Good. At least there is some documentation. It might not be all at one point, but it will be scattered throughout, so we'll get some idea.
Somewhat limited, because most of the memos I wrote, I didn't actually write. I didn't write in the form of Russ Dean to Clark McGregor. They were mostly Clark McGregor to the president, Clark McGregor to Holland or something like that. And they were written in a form so that he could make minor modifications and send them on. So most of my work would not be immediately visible.
This doesn't surprise me. It's something that many staff members tell us, that they wrote many memoranda for their supervisor for them to sign off on and send on, and there'd be no indication on the document that it was actually written by that person.
Right.
So that's why I was hoping maybe you had a cron file or something, carbon copies of those. In one or two instances, we've run across that type of file. It's a gold mine of information on the person. The other members of the Congressional Relations Office that I have interviewed in the past were all there prior to the time Clark McGregor showed up. So I have some feel for the way it was organized prior to that time. Generally speaking, as I understood it, the staff was divided, Senate, House, with a couple of others that acted as swingmen, or John Niedek or something like that, in special function. Could you give me a general view of the Clark McGregor Congressional Relations Office, a structure, or is it pretty much the same as it was before he got there? Any idea? Was it at all formal in terms of these individuals worked on House matters, these individuals worked on Senate matters?
Clark left what we refer to as the East Wing operation intact and left it operating as it was when we arrived, which had Bill Timmons as the assistant to the president in charge of overall responsibilities for congressional relations. under Bill when we first arrived was Ken Ballou and Gene Cowan in the Senate, and Dick Cook and Bill Castleman in the House. And then, of course, we had Jim Hogue, who came over shortly after we arrived. I don't know if you're interested in all this detail.
No, that's fine. I've got some of it, but it's nice to get it again from
you. They, Lynn Nofziger was here on the staff, and Jim Hogue was his assistant. When Lynn went down the street to the committee for the Republican National Committee, Jim Hogue came to our staff. He was always on our staff, in actual fact, in congressional relations, but he moved physically to the East Wing, took an office in the East Wing. So then, and he was sort of a swing man, handled a number of different operations, including the computer operation, this type of thing, and a lot of speech writing. Jim subsequently left, went to Treasury, and we got a White House fellow in who, in essence, replaced him. That's Bud McFarland, who was a major in the Marine Corps. John Niedecker, of course, has been and always will be, I imagine, in the institution that he is. Then Ken Ballou resigned to become Undersecretary of the Army. Gene Cowan moved up. Tom Corlogus came in. Actually, Tom Corlogus and Max Friedersdorf, who was working in the House side, came in roughly at the same time, and actually was before Ken Ballou left to become Undersecretary. But in any case, when Ken left, Gene moved up to be the number one man. Ken Ballou, Tom Corlogus was the number two man. Shortly thereafter, Gene Cowan left and became Vice President of ABC, and Tom Corlogus then became the number one man, and Wally Johnson came in from our congressional, he was in charge of congressional relations at the Justice Department, and he became the number two man.
Now that I didn't know. I didn't know Johnson was on the staff here. Right?
Yeah. He was a associate deputy attorney general in charge of legislation at the Justice Department and was, in essence, the head of congressional relations. He came over to become the number two man. On the House side, I can't recall exactly what the timing was. I think this happened after Bill Castleman. I'm sure it happened after Bill Castleman left to become general counsel of GSA, that Max Friedersdorf came on. In any case, he and Tom Corlogus came on essentially at the same time. Max, when Bill Castleman left, Max took over as the number two man in congressional relations for the House side. His background was that he was administrative assistant to Congressman Rauterbusch, and then he went to OEO as the head of congressional relations at OEO, and then he came to us as the number two man on the House side. So in essence, that's the way it worked. And after Ken Ballou left, they moved both Gene Cowan and Dick Cook up to be deputy assistants to the president. The structure now is that way. Bill Timmons, Dick Cook, and Tom Corlogus, Max Friedersdorf, and Wally Johnson, and now John Edith, of course, off to the side of special projects, Bud McFarland having direct responsibilities to Bill Timmons. When we came in, it's hard to describe really what happened. It's been described as Clark was sort of superimposed over the entire operation. Clark referred to it as a partnership with Clark McGregor's senior partner, he and Bill Timmons. In any case, he and Bill really did a lot of the same types of things. Clark's responsibilities were supposed to be primarily in the legislative analysis and development of strategy and this type of thing. The word strategy sounds sinister. Instead of the word strategy, I'll say his responsibility was to determine the way we were most likely to elicit a favorable response from Congress on a particular piece of legislation. And that if that included bringing members of Congress down to the White House to have them meet with the president or with a senior member of the staff to discuss a particular legislative proposal, that was the strategy. In any case, as it turned out, we had such a busy year in 1971 with end the war amendments and things like that really everyone was sort of constantly involved in a sort of a day-to-day active congressional relations role, calling members of Congress, trying to demonstrate the wisdom of our pursuit and the folly of all others and this type of thing, and to one degree or another we were successful. At 71, we were very successful, as a matter of fact. So to define Clark's role, really, it was across the board. He involved himself in day-to-day congressional relations where it was necessary, where he had a major piece of legislation merging to the top of a particular part of the process, i.e. A bill coming to the stage where it's in markup in the committee, and he was needed to call the chairman to get the skids greased. He was involved in the process of really developing legislation to one degree or another, again trying to suggest ways in which legislative proposals could perhaps be modified in a way to elicit a greater response from the particular committee it was likely to be handled by or by the Congress in total. And then, of course, beyond that, the typical congressional relations strategy development. So it's hard to say precisely how the structure worked. It wasn't really a Clark, McGregor, Bill Timmons, and then branch in for House and Senate. It was more of a partnership, really, between Bill and Clark. And then, of course, off to the side, Clark was a member of the Property Review Board, which had really nothing to do with congressional relations except from the standpoint that he was able to add his input into the Property Review Board suggesting congressional interests, legislation which would affect the actions of the Property Review Board, particular pieces of property that were of interest to members of Congress and this type of thing, from a standpoint to try to keep them apprised of what the likely congressional response was to be to PRB actions. And of course, he entered into the discussions from a substantive standpoint as well, as all the members of the PRB do. My responsibilities to with Clark were, as his personal staff aide, the breakdown in his office was essentially Clark, McGregor, he had two secretaries, and I was the staff, which meant essentially that my responsibilities were neither to the House or the Senate, but were really on a minute-to-minute basis determined by the events of that particular day. If Clark were interested in Social Security amendments to the debt ceiling or something like that, and needed preparation for his study of that subject, or whatever it happened to be, my responsibility was directly to help him in that capacity. I had no real direct areas of responsibility apart from Clark. Everything I did was directly related to his activities. He, of course, during the course of activities, he was so busy that big areas of things that he was working on, he left with me. But again, there's nothing that you can really segregate and say here was an area that was exclusively handled by Russ Dean.
Two questions along those lines. I think you've answered them. I just want to make sure. You had no typical day in the sense that you came in the morning, you attended a particular staff meeting, then you did this, and this the rest of the day. Okay.
No. It was typical from the standpoint that he did, in fact, attend the 7:30 meeting, and I attended it as well for a period of time, and then sort of lost interest in it. Then, of course, he attended the senior staff meeting at 8:15 with Haldeman and whoever else was involved. Schultz was involved, and Peterson was involved with Flanagan, all the senior staff, Ziegler and whatnot. In any case, he attended that meeting at 8:15. But after that, the day could go in any of many directions, and often and always did. It never ceased to amaze me the numbers of subject matters that Clark was able to handle effectively during a given day. It would run the gamut from sugar agreements to a dam in East Overshoe and back again to a piece of legislation. It just ran the gamut. It's one of the things about Clark, he has a tremendous facility to in essence inhale information and retain it almost indefinitely. It's sickening to watch him in action. But extremely difficult to keep up with a man like that. But in any case, he must have been
very trying.
Yeah. But in any case, a lesser man would have been crushed by the type of pressure that Clark was visited upon Clark on a daily basis. Clark stood up under very well. So it's impossible really to delineate a typical day.
All right.
There's no such thing.
You said that you had no specific areas of responsibility. I would interpret that to mean, would it be fair to describe you then as a generalist in terms of your...
Boy, I'll say.
Okay. A generalist with a legal slant or a legal background. did he rely upon you because of your legal background? Was that your strong suit to him, in his opinion?
Well...
Would the assignments you received from him in large part be legal in essence or subject?
No, they ran the gamut. I frequently had occasion to make use of my legal background, not only on pieces of legislation, but on substantive matters that happened in the matter of course here at the White House, where I would research something from a legal standpoint as opposed to a legislative standpoint. So I did make use of that. But see, here again, my job was not simply analyzing. Virtually every speech that Clark ever gave, I wrote. So I wrote his speeches. And I researched those that he gave it from an impromptu standpoint. Clark is an easy person to write a speech for, but almost anyone, you have to either know a guy very, very well to write a speech for him, or you have to study with him. Study his past speeches. I just had a facility. I don't know. It wasn't something that I developed, and certainly not something that I jump up and down about. But I had a facility to be able to write a speech that was conducive to his style, and as a consequence, that was helpful to him. On the other hand, I have to say, to my detriment, that Clark could take almost any speech and make it good. But in any case, that was one area of my responsibility in his office, in that he spoke frequently, and my function there was to handle the event to the greatest degree I could, making sure that things were straight, making sure that he got out there properly, that he was met, and this type of thing. My responsibility then, of course, was to write the speech, to hopefully get him to edit it. Though that didn't always happen frequently. I found myself having to edit the speech myself and then having it typed on a speech-type typewriter, and then he, of course, gave it. And then, of course, following up on the speech, sending copies out, that's sort of an encapsulated area of the speech operation. But beyond that, it was a matter of, we received, hundreds of pieces of mail a day, most of which were from members of Congress. Our responsibility, and I share this thankfully with the secretaries, was to try to get rid of as much of this mail as possible and have other people take care of it. A lot of it was handled, of course, in the routine fashion. A letter prepared for Clark's signature, which really did no more than acknowledge the letter and say we're working. And then, of course, we'd have it handled subsequently by the people who were most able to deal with that particular subject matter. On the other hand, there were a large number of letters that only Clark, or I should say, Clark's operation could have answered, because it's something we've been working on before. To the greatest degree possible, I would stop that material. I would complete it. I would take the action on it and do whatever was required by the mail. By virtue of the same fact, we received. Just tons of paper memoranda from other offices in the White House, because virtually everything that happens, unfortunately, has some congressional impact. And as a consequence, virtually everyone wanted to have some word from Clark as to how this should be handled. Are we okay doing this? How does this sound? This type of thing. And to the greatest degree possible, I would take the action on those things. And if need be, I would get the other people on the staff, the people in the East Wing, to respond directly to it if they were asking something that was on a particular piece of legislation that was in the process and we were trying to analyze the likelihood of its being passed by a particular date. Something that would take me a great deal of time to do the actual legwork on would be perhaps a 10-second job for a person who's working the legislation on a daily basis. I would try to get the information from them. But in essence, it was a matter of spending a great deal of time drafting responses to the myriad of paper that came in on a daily basis, and hoping and praying that he would accept the views that were expressed on paper.
Would you have any rough estimate as to the amount of time you might have spent in the course of the day on an average basis on handling this correspondence that came in? Would you say 2 or 3 hours a day on the average?
On the average day, I would probably spend, if you're talking about the memoranda that came
right.
in, if you're talking about all the mail that came in, I probably spent on the order of 8 hours or 9 hours on that type of material. But see, we had an awful lot of other things that were going on too. We had members of Congress who wanted to come down and talk. I took maybe 200 phone calls a day, trying again to relieve as much pressure from Clark. If I had 200, he had 300. So, you know,
everyone in congressional relations has talked about the frequency of that telephone ringing off the hook.
Right.
And it sounded incredible to me the first few times I talked with somebody from congressional relations. I said, oh, you must be exaggerating.
No,
but I kept hearing it time and time again, and I began to believe.
Well, people don't realize that it's not just 535 members of Congress. Each of them has at least 15 staff members, and senators can go up to 30 or so. So you're constantly getting calls from, and not all of them, probably the majority of them, didn't really relate that much to congressional relations. But very frequently, I'd get a call from a member of Congress who take us. Classic illustration, a staff member would call Pat Price's operation and ask for tour tickets. And Pat Price, you know, we want 400 tickets for tomorrow, something like that. Well, the request would be denied, and then the member would call Clark. Well, if at all possible, what I would try to do is intercept the call. If I couldn't intercept it, then I'd call back. And talk to the member of Congress and try to explain the situation and try to, you know, do as best we could for the member within our obvious physical limitations. And so a lot of things were like that. Or someone would call up and say, where's Kissinger today? You know, this type of thing, which is a constant question. And so a lot of it didn't relate specifically to legislation, but a lot of collateral things. And a number of congressmen's members of Congress staff became or always were lazy, and anything that had to do with the executive branch was much easier to call Clark McGregor and say, hey, I'm trying to find out about such and such and so and so, what's the story? Well, of course, Clark wouldn't know. It would be a Bureau of Reclamation project or something like that, and rather than their having to trace around through the Department of Interior and whatnot and find the right person, it's easier to call Clark McGregor, and then Clark McGregor finds out who it is and has then have the person at Bureau of Reclamation call the congressman back, or worse yet, the staff member. And so there was a great deal of this type of thing going on, too. So I imagine I spent probably four hours at least on the phone, and a lot of little calls that didn't really amount to much time, things that I could transfer in a hurry that were hard to compute. But I imagine 4 or 5 hours on the phone was easy.
Did you get up to Capitol Hill much, John? Were you up there doing any liaison work up there on bills, or for the most part, were you anchored down here?
I was here primarily. I was here in the office most of the time. I went up to the Hill on special things where Clark would send me to the Hill to do something in particular. And occasionally I'd go to the Hill to mend the bridge or something like that, where something had been done wrong and it was worth it to take the extra time to go up and show the member of Congress the great concern we had for his well-being by taking the time of a staff man to come up and talk to him personally about it. So I spent my share of time mending bridges. But so far as like Dick Cook's or the Gene Cowan's and Ken Blue's and whatnot, I spent no time up there in relation to what they did.
How about your contacts with congressional relations staffs and the departments and the agencies?
Considerable.
You've already used up 12 hours of your day.
Well, it was primarily, based on that type, on the the instance I mentioned a minute ago.
Okay, all right.
Where we get Congressman Schmaltz of East Overshoot would call up about a Forest Service project. Well, then I would call the Department of Agriculture to Bill Galbraith, for example, and say, hey, Congressman Schmaltz is all uptight about this project. Could you find out what the story is and call him back? So I was constantly farming this stuff out.
I'm sure we did. Okay. Just an
awful lot of that. I was constantly farming. There were certain departments I dealt with much more frequently than others.
Do you care to name any of those? Would it help at all to understand the relationship of the White House to those departments, or?
Well, the departments I dealt most with were the domestically, I can't really say it too much. The Department of Agriculture I contacted a lot, because a lot of the members they called were from agricultural states, and a lot of that was because they knew Clark, and Clark was from the Midwest and whatnot. It's hard to really psych out exactly why we got a lot of those calls, but I got a lot of agriculture, a lot of interior. Commerce I dealt with fairly frequently. State and defense, considerable contact there, primarily because we were constantly trying to get information to members about our Vietnam position and whatnot to make sure that they had as much information as possible so that they could vote intelligently on the endless attempts to foreclose our activities. So Rady Johnson and Dave Abshire, I was very frequent communication with them. I was in communication a lot with GSA, but primarily because of the fact that I was in the senior review group. Tom Girardi and I dealt closely for quite some time. But then again, that was sort of in a collateral area. Interior, agriculture, commerce.
Transportation, HEW, HUD?
HEW, yes, HEW. HUD, not nearly as much, and transportation, not nearly as much. I don't know why, but just the way it worked out.
A question that I've asked previous people from congressional relations was one
labor.
I picked up in one of the articles I read once, and that was that at that particular time, and this predates McGregor's arrival, the congressional relations staff was not involved, according to the article, in the development or the drafting of legislation, but rather in taking it from the White House up to the Hill and attempting to get Congress to pass it. Would that very, very simplistic analysis hold true at all during the McGregor reign, or would you just say no, on the contrary, we were very much involved in the drafting of the legislation under McGregor? You mentioned something in passing earlier which led me to believe that McGregor was in fact involved in this.
He was. He was involved to a greater degree than that reference you mentioned would suggest. Obviously, the domestic program was pretty well in concrete by the time we came aboard, the domestic program for the 92nd Congress. There were, however, some modifications that were made in that domestic program, which Clark was instrumental in facilitating. He would see a problem area, it would modify it slightly, then that problem area ceased to exist. The place that he was probably most instrumental in involving himself in actually legislative drafting, though it was not always our legislative proposals that he was working with, was in the international field.
Was that right?
But then again, it was because he was very much involved in the negotiation on the Vietnam issue, and he was involved heavily at that stage. Again, it's hard to say. Clark was not a draftsman. He didn't sit down and, you know, cross through a bill and this type of thing. But Clark has a fantastic ability to really perceive the mood of the Congress and the mood of a committee, the mood of a member. And as a consequence, his job would be, he found himself frequently coming back here, talking to a particular staff member and say, if we follow this particular course of action, we're likely to meet with a disastrous defeat. That's the type of legislative redrafting I would consider. So far as looking at the revenue sharing program, for example, or welfare reform or whatnot, and when at its inception, and suggesting how it be written or involving himself in the early drafting stages, no.
Were there any specific assignments that you got that occupied your time over an extended period that come to mind that you'd like to mention, either bills or projects or something of that nature, outside of the speech writing, handling the correspondence,
not
being
really
a personal assistant?
Not really. I found myself on, during the course of a week, involved in three or four major types of projects where I spent an inordinate amount of time on that particular project is related to other things I was working on. But nothing that, for example, like a person on the domestic council, that would lapse
yeah.
over a period of months where I was working on a particular program.
Okay. Was there, during the McGregor period, staff meetings that you might characterize as being regular in frequency, every Monday morning, once a week, once a month, or something like that, where the congressional relations staff would get together and hash out anything?
The only regular meeting that was not, well, there were really two that were not designed to handle a specific problem were, one, the 7:30 meeting, which was not really ours. It was a meeting jointly held by George Shultz and the OMB staff and John Ehrlichman. We, however, had at least two participants in that meeting at all times, one from the House, one from the Senate. Generally, in addition to those, Clark, myself, or someone else would be sitting in. But that was just sort of a general meeting that followed throughout. The second meeting was immediately following the 7:30 meeting. The people who had attended the 7:30 meeting from congressional relations staff would meet with Clark in his office. And again, it would be sort of a what's happening today, you know, type of thing, and not designed specifically to look at a particular problem. Beyond that, there were not regular staff meetings other than that, primarily because there were so many things going on that almost on a regular basis they met at least once or twice or three times a day, but it would be on a specific issue, and at the same time other matters were brought in. I mean, if something else were happening, that might be mentioned in one of those meetings just in passing, and might be disposed of at that time. But there was such a frequency and such regularity in these meetings that a regular staff meeting really wasn't necessary.
All of this helps to clarify in my mind, and hopefully in the mind of a researcher, just how demanding that particular operation or office is. It's incredible how everybody seems to come in and expect you to help out, and you just can't possibly have any sort of a routine. I would gather from what you've been saying that you probably were operating on, a 14-hour day, a 12-hour day at least?
Well, I was on generally a 14-hour day. Clark ran generally around 16 or maybe more. I had the extreme pleasure and definite advantage of being able to leave the office and go home. Clark may leave an hour before I do, but he will generally hit four or five events in the evening, receptions, dinners, etc., as many as six in the evening, and frequently his day would start, of course, prior to 7:30, and regularly he got home, I'm sure, after 1 o'clock, at least two or three times a week, if not more frequently than that. Other weeks, some weeks it was much worse than that.
Yeah.
And some weeks, of course, he wouldn't have this type of meeting, or he would have it, would cancel, and he'd stay on the Hill until midnight. My hours were absolutely atrocious. His hours were worse. So it was probably the only thing that kept me going, was realizing that he had it worse than I did.
And for the most part, his daily schedule was something that you were involved in as far as both during the regular day and after, if it involved business, official business? Not only speaking engagements, but non-speaking engagements?
Well, I didn't handle his schedule, per se. Kay Humphrey, his personal secretary, handled his daily schedule, and she was responsible for shipping through to him all the invitations to all the thousands of receptions that he was invited to, and all the dinner parties and theater and everything else. And if he'd gone to all of that, he wouldn't have been able to come to the office at all. Her responsibility was to try to sort that out and have some balance to it, and not have more than five events in one night or something like that. My job so far as scheduling was concerned were primarily the special types of things. If, for example, Pat O'Donnell frequently called and asked, you know, we need to get a big gun for such and such, my job then was to try to convince Clark that he should devote a day to go to Kansas City or whatever it happened to be to speak to a group and come back. My job would then be to arrange that tour. Kay Humphrey would handle it, getting the tickets and whatnot, but I would make sure that I'd make contact and the trip was fairly smooth, and would try to arrange all the collateral aspects of the trip itself. So far as his daily activity was concerned, again, his schedule was handled by Kay. I was with him a great deal of the day, but not all the day. He had constantly, there were meetings going on in his office, and it was impossible, of course, to sit in his office and do anything with him there and still get all the other things done. So it was a lot of catch-up ball, and I'd meet with him late in the afternoon and find out what was going on, and if anything needed to be followed up on, he'd give me either written memorandum or verbal instructions, and then that would be my job for the evening to carry out. But I wasn't with him minute to minute during the day. It wasn't time. I don't know how he did it, but...
But you probably would be the person that could give the most complete and accurate description of Clark McGregor's daily activities, I gather, of any member of the staff, including the secretaries.
Probably, with the exception of Clark. My memory's not nearly as good as Clark's, and he could remember specific examples much better than I. But I'm sure that I could give a better view, not just because I know more about his day than the secretary did, but I knew more about the subject matters that he was dealing with, and was more familiar with the personalities who were speaking within the types of demands that were being made of his time, and perhaps a better appreciation for the type of emotional and time-consuming output that he had to expend for particular subject matters that were tougher issues for him and something that required more of his time.
Were there any other members of the White House staff outside of congressional relations that you dealt with frequently? Or would the answer to that be, gee, I dealt with all of them as the situation demanded and
yes.
required?
All of them, really.
Would there be any that you didn't deal with?
Well, it's hard to prove the negative. There are a lot that I don't know, so...
Any offices that you didn't deal with much?
There are probably a lot that I didn't deal with at all that I just don't come to mind. Office of Science and Technology, I don't think we had much dealing with. OMB, we did. Ray Price, we did, as the occasion arose.
The press office.
The press office on a daily basis.
Chuck Colson's operation.
Not that much. Occasionally with Chuck Colson's operation, he had some. I worked on a couple of speeches that he wrote for groups that one or more of Chuck Colson's staff had set up. The old, Retired Teachers Association and this type of thing. And Chuck Colson's staff, Bud Evans, called me about that, and we got Clark pumped in. Clark met with.
Yeah.
Chuck Colson, and I imagine a great deal in these big meetings that they have, but not knowing really that fully well what Colson's areas of responsibility where I don't think we dealt with them that much.
How about Herbert Klein's operation?
Not all that regularly. Not all that regularly. That would be one of the sort of the second level that we dealt with.
Domestic council people.
Yeah. Now again, see, it's hard for me to say that Clark was on the phone a great deal, and he may have dealt with Herb Klein on a minute-to-minute basis, and I know he did deal with Klein a lot during particular periods of time on particular subjects. My relationship was, again, generally a fact-gathering type of process, gathering information so that I could respond fully to a memorandum that had been written to McGregor. Frequently that required consultation with members of the domestic council staff.
Whoever was an expert or knowledgeable.
Whoever was right. The expert on that. And so really, I guess I'm giving somewhat of my view of this. I dealt with
that's
Ray
what
Price.
I want.
Yeah, I dealt with Ray Price and his staff less than domestic counsel. I dealt with Chuck Colson less than Ray Price and Herb Klein. I dealt with science and technology, not at all. I dealt with Herb Stein occasionally. Matter of fact, the only times I really dealt with Herb Stein was when I was actually writing speeches on economic matters, and I needed specific information that they were able to supply to me. Some of the other offices, Kingsley's office, I dealt with a lot because we had thousands of requests from members of Congress to get people jobs, and so we were constantly pumping stuff to Dan Kingsley to get them to follow through.
Would copies of these speeches be in McGregor's file somewhere, John? Your drafts with his notations, or?
I don't know. No, I think most of my drafts, on hindsight, I probably should have kept them just for my own curiosity. But most of my drafts and speeches with all the big red marks and whatnot went immediately to the circular file as they were being typed. There is a master file of all his speeches that are categorized, but he probably has that now with him. I don't think we included any of his speeches in his file unless it was attached to correspondence with a particular group that had requested Clark's presence at an event. But I don't think many of his speeches would probably be in the file.
Do you have any idea at this point where you'll be after the campaign? Will you be coming back over here?
I have no idea.
Okay.
No idea. Not altogether certain where I'll be next week, much less in 3 months.
Would it be possible for you to answer this other question that I throw out? Sometimes I get an answer to it, sometimes I don't. What gave you the greatest sense of satisfaction, of course, at the time that you were here on the White House? Was it a particular assignment? Was it just kind of a general feeling of that you were contributing to this administration? I've gotten all sorts of answers to a question like that. Some
greatest
people
sense
just
of accomplishment?
Satisfaction, what have you?
Well, I'll have to say, in all candor, the greatest satisfaction that I ever derived from my work here, but not necessarily just here, it was on the Hill as well, was keeping up with Clark. And that's too simplified. With, in essence, trying to keep up with the process and keep all the processes working properly. That was a never-ending struggle, of course, and when you'd see things working properly, where something would happen and the next step would happen by itself without a great deal of prodding, there's a great deal of satisfaction involved there. I think it's hard to distinguish that from the fact that you're making a meaningful contribution. It was encouraging to see activities that I was involved in. And again, it's hard to distinguish the things that I was involved in from the things that Clark was involved in. It's that very little of my work shows up. But it was encouraging to see things that Clark was involved in, shall we say, reach fruition, where something that was misunderstood became understood. A program that was in jeopardy for the wrong reasons was no longer in jeopardy, or was in jeopardy for the right reasons. But it was this type of thing. Really, I guess it's just getting the job done was extremely satisfying, and even more so since it really never ever got to that point of being perfect, to where things were done just the way you would have liked to have them happen.
Drawing upon your experience on the Hill, is there any way to compare the responsibilities of the assistant to the president for congressional relations with the responsibilities of a senator or a congressman on the Hill?
Very little. Clark approaches everything he does in a particular way, and the particular way is a very precise, thorough, professional way. So Clark did his job very much the same way on the Hill as he did it here, and as the way he's doing it across the street, I'm sure. But aside from the fact the way he did his job, there's not much similarity. There he worked with the administration on a number of occasions on particular matters that were of great interest to the administration, and did a lot of the same types of things that he did here, in that he talked to members of Congress and tried to persuade them to go along with his legislative program, which of course was the president's legislative program, or dissuade them from going against the president. So there were there were some similarities there, but here, of course, he was staff. He was a member of the president's staff, and up there he was an individual member of Congress, and he was as high as he could go in his little fiefdom, and so there similarities break down somewhat there. On the other hand, Clark was on the other side of a couple of issues and worked the other way a couple of times, as I recall.
Well, that's only as it should be. I mean, say he's an independent individual up there,
right,
who represents a very small segment of the American public, and so I wouldn't fault him if he didn't vote 100% the president's way.
He didn't. It's really hard to compare the two positions. A lot of the things would look pretty much the same from the outside, in that he was giving speeches, and that he was involved in the legislative process, but the way he was involved was vastly different. So I don't think there are tremendous similarities. I'd have to think about that for a while.
Well, it was a thought off the top of my head, and I thought I'd throw it out and see if there was any meaningful possibility. That takes care of the questions that I generally toss out. Now, you're in a position to judge whether or not I've tried to elicit responses from you that cover most of your activities and responsibilities. Now, what I do from here on out is sit down, listen to the tape, and write up a resume of it as best I can, send you a copy of it whenever I get it done, which is sometimes months, and ask you to review it and make any corrections or modifications that you wish, delete anything, change anything, add anything that you wish. That goes in your file, and hopefully at some point in the future we'll be back knocking on your door saying, okay, can we sit down and have another session or two with you, and let's talk about some specific things, bills, programs, or what have you.
Catch me soon, they dissipate rapidly.
Well, at any rate, are there any other things that you'd like to say that you feel are important enough warrants making a comment about that I haven't touched on?
About our operations and Not really. I think it's been fairly thoroughly covered.
Well, it may be after I get this thing written up and sent to you, you'll spot some gaps, John, that you think need to be filled in. We view this as the initial step in an attempt to document your activities. Hopefully, we'll be able to build on it, so it's by no means the final.
Right.
Well,